Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
It means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means shaking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up and awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive, but also profitable.
When you use your reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hello, and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast. It's producer Harry here. Now, we've got a very special guest for you today on the podcast. So just give me a few minutes to set the scene and tell you this intro. So today's episode is with former Olympic silver medalist and world champion boxer, Amir Khan. We go on a journey with Amir through his life, his boxing career, his ups and downs, his challenges, the highs and lows, everything involved in this exclusive interview. You're going to hear Amir talk about things that he's never talked about before. It was an absolute pleasure to go and meet Amir, but it was pretty funny. We were supposed to go meet him at his gym, and the crew, we waited outside for 3 hours, and it turned out there was a mix-up. And Amir wasn't going to be there, and we were thinking, oh God, we're not going to get this interview done. But Amir called Rob up, and he was like, hey Rob, sorry about the mix-up, come to my house. So he went to his house. He's got a really beautiful house in Bolton, and he's such a warm, humble man. He welcomed us into his home, and we recorded the podcast there. So Amir Khan shot to fame in 2004, winning a silver medal at the 2004 Olympic Games. Now Amir goes into detail how he actually wasn't old enough to even go to the Olympics, and that because he was such a hot prospect, the Boxing Commission changed the rules so he could go to the Olympics. And Amir Khan truly set the way for Britain at the Olympics. Boxing for the Olympics in Britain just wasn't getting enough funding. And because of Amir's success, this allowed more funding into boxing in Britain. And, you know, many years on from Amir's success in 2004, we had Anthony Joshua and many other Olympians win big, win gold at future Olympics. Amir talks about dealing with superstar fame at just 17. He was just a humble college kid who did some boxing, and after the Olympics, he became a household name. So with the fame and the fortune, he still managed to keep himself very humble and very grounded, and then he gets into detail about that, which I found absolutely fascinating. So Amir has had some absolute wonderful achievements in his career. Obviously, it all started with the 2004 silver medal. So since turning pro, he's become a world champion. He's fought in multiple weight divisions, and he's fought some of the very best boxers in the world. But obviously, he's had some lows as well, losing some big fights, like to Canelo Alvarez, who's the current pound-for-pound best boxer in the world. Amir reveals as well that he actually made $15 million in that one fight. But there's some absolute gold in this interview. If you think this is all just about boxing orientated, it's not. There's a lot of business chat in this. And I personally found there's a lot of inspiration of what Amir was saying, you know, how to overcome defeat and big challenges in your life and how to overcome that and have it, you know, and learn from that so you can develop and grow as a person. I thought that was absolute gold, Amir was saying. Big shots were fired as well. Obviously, long-term infamous rival Kell Brook. Amir did not hold anything back, and he went to town on Kell. As me as a big boxing fan, I hope that we do get that fight, Kell Brook and Amir Khan. It was an absolute pleasure to meet a hero of mine. This is probably personally my favourite ever interview. I've done every single one, and I'd say this is my personal favourite. I've followed his career ever since 2004. He's a major reason why I absolutely love the sport of boxing. He's a humble, funny, family man, not bad from a kid from Bolton who became a world champion. So final thing from me, if you want to see the definitive version of this interview, the director's cut, so to speak, you have to head over to YouTube and go to the Rob Moore channel. We've got all our interviews on there, not just with Amir, but this version of the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast, I think, is at its best on its video form. So go over to YouTube, Rob Moore, subscribe. Right, so let's get straight into this with former silver Olympic medalist and world champion Amir Khan. And remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here. We are live on my Facebook page and YouTube and the podcast, The Disruptive Entrepreneur Show. And we're here with Amir Khan.
How's it going, guys?
Amir,
you all right?
Thanks a lot for doing this.
No problem. Thank you.
We have had a mission today.
I know. I had you guys going all over the place, man. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault. You've been awesome. Thanks a lot for letting us into your place as well. So I thought we'd do something a bit different. And right. Now, well, I don't know if anyone's done this before, but we normally just ask some questions.
Yeah.
But we're doing a little 12-rounder.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. So 12 questions each round?
Yeah, 12 sections.
12 sections.
Yeah. You can take as long or as short as you like.
Oh, cool.
And I'll let everyone know on the live what these rounds are, so you know. So round one will be you growing up.
Right.
Round two will be the Olympics.
Right.
Round three will be turning pro.
Right.
Round four will be you won your 18 fights and then what?
Yeah.
Round five will be your first defeat. Round six will be your hardest times. Round seven will be people are calling you to quit. Round eight will be dealing with haters. Round nine will be your business interests and all your philanthropy and stuff. Round 10 is a cheeky round. Right. It's a new one. Round 11 is the quickfire round.
Right.
And I think we've got a round 12. Have a check on the email, Kieran, because I think it might be there. Are you happy with that?
I'm perfect with that, yeah. That's all right. Good to go, man.
Great. Why don't you take us back to when you started boxing, when you were a kid, all the way up to the Junior Olympics.
Yeah, so started boxing at the age of 8. I was very hyperactive when I was young, full of energy. And used to always get into trouble in school. So like my father's, like, obviously like, when I used to come home, I used to always be really bad fighting my cousins. And so my dad's like, what should I do with this kid? So he took me to the boxing club. Now, anyone else would be like, your kid's for always fighting and always misbehaving. A boxing club is probably the worst place you want to take him to. But guess what? It did the opposite to me.
Yeah.
It definitely disciplined me so much that my behavior in school changed and the way I acted and everything else totally changed. Like people were calling my family up saying, he's totally changed. I mean, it's not like this the way he was. I mean, what have you done? You know, you need to tell us what you've done with him. And all it was boxing. Boxing changed my life. And obviously, that's why I started to commit to it more and more as time went on.
Mm.
And then...
How did it change your life?
It changed my life a lot. You know, like I said, kept me off the streets, kept me out of trouble, disciplined me, gave me focus in life, gave me goals in life as well.
Mm.
And... If I wasn't a boxer, I don't know where I'd be. I'd be lost.
Yeah.
So I think it's given me like a path to follow.
Mm.
And not only that, like, you know, so many good things have come from it. You know, me enjoying my sport, winning titles, winning world titles and everything else, you know, get recognized outside, get love from people, get great fan mail. I've started my Amir Khan Foundation, which is, helping less fortunate people. This is all through boxing.
Yeah.
So boxing's helped me to help the community and help other people out there, or opening boxing academies around the world. So I thank boxing for everything.
Mm. Great. And at what point did you or your trainers or your club go, you've got something here, you're going to be good?
You know what? It must have been about when I was an amateur, it must have been when I was about 11 years old. I just remember 11 years old. It was when I won the first championships, when it got to finals, won the championships, become national champion at the age of 11. And
wow.
That's where it all changed for me, man. That's when people thought, like, I had other trainers coming over to me. And I didn't think I was going to ever be something. I never, ever thought I'd be a world champion or anything like that. I knew I would be good, and I was one of them young fighters. I used to train very, very hard. But when other people kept coming to me and saying to me, Amir, this kid's going to be a good fighter.
Mm.
Now, when they come from other people, that's amazing. You know what I mean? It's like you could be telling yourself a lot of things, but when other people start telling you, that means something. So, that's what it was, man. That's what totally changed my life, fighting, winning championships, winning cups, different medals and everything, totally put me where I wanted to be, you know what I mean? And totally changed my life big time, because I never knew that, you know, I would never think I would be in this position where, you know, I love literally everything I want in life. I love like a trophy room full of trophies and belts and everything.
Yeah.
Normally when I used to watch boxing on television, I used to be like, wow, look at that. Or when I used to watch wrestling and stuff, I'd be like, look at the belts.
Yeah. We interviewed Kane yesterday.
I heard that.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. So when I used to see these belts, I wish I could have one of them. Yeah. You know, but now I've got my own.
Yeah, and how does that feel?
Feels amazing.
Yeah. So you don't get bored of it and it doesn't become normal. Never bored. Still.
No, you know, whenever people come to my house, I'll pull them out for them and I show them and all my friends love them. And honestly, it's just amazing. I just sent them off to get them polished up.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I just sent them off to get polished up because it's just, you know, when you look at them belts, it shows all the hard work and it makes me remember all the hard work I went through.
Yeah.
Running up the hills, running, in swimming and sparring and, you know, literally getting beat up in training camp. I mean, these are things that I've won with those belts.
Yeah. And then what age were you when you won Junior Olympics?
The Junior Olympics, I was 16.
And you won gold there, didn't you?
I won a gold medal, beating a lot of good fighters. And then won the gold medal and the best boxer of the tournament.
Right.
I won that and it was there when somebody come over to me and said, are you going to be going to the Olympic Games? I'm like, no. I go, what makes you say that? And he says, you're allowed to go when you're 17. When do you turn 17? I said, I turned 17 in December. And he says, well, the Olympics are going to be in summer, so you can go to Olympics. You'll be 17. I'm like, but the rule in England was a senior is at 18 of age. So then we had to change the whole rules.
All right.
England boxing changed the whole rules for me.
Wow.
For 17 to then go to the senior, and become a senior boxer and then go to, the Olympics. And then obviously, I did my homework. I went to qualify because the best fighter that was in the England team, I said, but they did not want to pick me first. They said to me, look, we're not going to send you.
Why?
Because I was too young.
Yeah.
And they want me to go to slowly, like from that level, junior level, which I understand. Yeah, 100%. It wasn't nothing bad. But obviously I got really excited about going to the Olympics when someone told me. So I was like, let me spar or let me fight with the guy who is the best in my weight category. Who are you going to send to the Olympic qualifiers? Because before you even get to the Olympics, you have to qualify for them. Who are you going to send to Olympic qualifiers? So they said, we have this one guy. And when they let me spar with him, I literally destroyed him. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Like, and that's when it all changed for me.
Right. And what? So they found out about that, and you.
Yeah, I had to do. It's a little bit different the way I had to do it because obviously I had to fight the guy. But it was quite funny. Yeah. Mm. You know, obviously saying to the coaches, let me fight the guys just to show you guys and prove myself that I'm the better fighter.
Ooh.
And that's what I did.
Great.
And then they let me go to Olympics and, to the qualifiers. And then from all the national team, there must have been about 12, 13 boxers. I was the only one that qualified.
Wow.
So the guys they didn't want to send, the guy that they were looking over, you know, was the only guy to qualify for the Olympic Games and win a medal. See, what happens is, when you get national funding from the government, they always want you to get X amount of medals. And for the Olympics, it had one medal you have to win, doesn't matter what colour it is. And if they didn't get that, then the funding drops.
Yeah.
So luckily,
you delivered.
I delivered for them because if they didn't send me, then that would be the funding. And then you just think about it because then 4 years later, it was a Beijing Olympics. Now look how many medals we won there because the funding went back into boxing.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was 2012 where Anthony Joshua won the gold medal.
Yeah.
So you see our boxing's only got better and better and we started to win more medals in boxing.
Mm.
So it could have been the start of something, man.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. You are solely responsible. So before we move on to round two, I know you said that your dad, your family sent you to, get into boxing. But what's the reason you carried it on? Is it just a love for boxing? Is it because it kept you off the streets? Is there something else that drove you to keep boxing?
I loved being pushed, man. I loved being pushed and like being challenged.
Yeah.
And that's what it was for me. I got challenged all the time and I went to prove to myself that, you know, how good I am and how strong I am.
Right.
And I'm not one to give up. So that's the reason I kept going.
Great. So that's round one. So round two is the Olympics. How did it feel when you got first your junior gold and then your senior silver?
Yeah, so I won the, in 04, it was the year of the Olympics, and they sent me to the World Championships, and they didn't want to send me first. They said to me, look, we don't want to send you because you're too young, and obviously that's the reason that they don't want to send me to the Olympics. So obviously we overcome that. Then it was a junior World Championships, and they said to me that we're not going to send you to those as well. I said, why? I go, you've already qualified for the Olympic Games. You want to go to a junior championship. God forbid you get beat. Mm-hmm. Is that just going to knock your confidence? You go into the Olympic Games, which is the biggest tournament in the in amateur boxing.
Yeah.
So I said, I want to go.
Why did you want to go?
Because, first of all, I would have got extra experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what they were thinking, because God forbid I got beat by someone there. I would have got like such bad press from the media in the UK. They would have said, this guy got beat in the junior level boxing in the World Championship, but and he's thinking of going to Olympics. And see, I would have, everything would have crashed really for me.
Mm.
You know, my confidence and everything else. So in a way, I put pressure on myself, really.
Yeah.
And I went there. I said to them, I want to go to the World Championship. I went there, I won the gold medal. But in the second fight, I broke my thumb.
Is that what that, that's...
He's a lump there.
Yeah.
So that's been there for since 2003.
Wow.
Or 2004.
Yeah.
I hit someone with the overhand right.
Yeah.
And I
more like my, a UFC move.
Well, yeah, one of them, yeah. And I snapped my my thumb right in there. And obviously, they...
What was
the
that?
The second round of the championship. That was
like it the finals?
No. Before the quarterfinals.
Oh, really?
Before the quarterfinals. So I'm just my second fight in the championship. Stopped the first guy, the Chinese Taipei boxer. And then my second fight was against a Korean. And that's when it broke. And then...
And you just fought through it?
I fought through it. I had the England coaches all said to me that, look, you should pull out. Like, you've got the Olympics in like 3 months' time. So why are you risking it? I said, no, I want to fight. Obviously, the ball was in my court. I could dictate. I said, listen, I want to fight. And even if it's with one hand, and I fought through the whole championship with one hand and won the gold medal.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
And then that gave me so much confidence because right. I was like, wow, I did that with one hand. Imagine me going to Olympic Games. So that in a way helped me so much because I was like, if I did that with one hand, what am I going to be like with two good hands, you know?
Our newest boxing superstar celebrated the night away with his family after his triumphant return from Athens.
And it's just brilliant. It just gives me that extra motivation, that extra push to go on and do more.
So after Olympics, life totally changed. People, like, I could walk outside, people recognise me. Wherever I go, people know who I am.
Mm.
Whereas before, even going to Olympic Games, no one knew me. No one knew who Amir Khan was or what I looked like. But now, like, even if people have heard the name, they might not know what I look like, but they've heard the name, you know.
Yeah.
That and when I came back from the Olympics, like, oh yeah, I'm Amir Khan. So when I used to call say for my mobile phones or flights, I used to call and go, Amir, are you the same Amir Khan that went to Olympics? I'm like, yeah, it is. And I swear it's crazy because you end up getting so many freebies. I swear to God, it is the best. So whenever I call, because I like to do things myself. So
I'm going to call myself Amir Khan just to get some freebies.
I call the banks up and I call everyone up myself, yeah? And just to know, like, if there's a problem, I like to just get on the phone quickly and get it all sorted.
Yeah.
So when I call them, even in America, when I call, like, an American bank or whatever, they're like, can we ask if this is the boxer Amir Khan?
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, it is, yeah. And the tone totally changes. Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, what can we do for you?
Yeah.
And then they'll give you loads of, like, oh, it's crazy. We load of freebies down and everything. But, life totally changed after the Olympics, honestly. And from being a boy, I was only 17. I used to still be in college. And I still went back to college after the Olympic Games. And
why did you keep college up?
I did it because I thought, you know, it's something to fall back on. God forbid, you know, I could break my hand tomorrow.
Mm.
At least there's something I can fall back on.
Yeah.
And it was sports science I did. So when I went back to college, every day I used to go back to college. I have queues of people who want to meet me.
Mm.
Like, and then there'll be...
Do you like that side of it?
It was nice for a little bit, but then they got a bit crazy after that. Because you just want to be yourself. You want to be normal. I was only 17. And then I had so many media, press, TV, literally, like, before, they couldn't get hold of me at home.
Yeah.
Or they couldn't get hold of me at the gym because we would not let them there. So they'll come through the college.
Right, yeah.
But they'll get grab hold of me like while I'm walking. And I'm not rude, you know. If someone came over to me, I'll be like, if they ask me a question, I'll answer it.
Yeah.
That's the type of guy I am.
Mm.
But yeah, it was a big change. But you know what? I handled it well.
Yeah.
And I think you could take it two ways. If I handled it and it got to my head,
did it ever get to your head?
Never did. No. Because that's, look at me, I'm still the same person. Yeah. And I've got this far.
Yeah.
Because it didn't get to my head. Yeah. But if I let it get to my head, I don't think I'd be in this position at all now.
Yeah, yeah. And is there anything about your old life when you weren't known that you miss?
Not really.
No.
Not really.
Yeah. Yeah, I must admit, I think I prefer to be famous than not. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I mean, financially, I'm good now. Course, so, yeah. Like, really, like, it's just, I thank God for everything you've given me, you know. Mm. And I would not like to go back there and do all that again.
No.
Or even be back in that position, because it was a little bit tougher. I was young then as well. See, it all came to me when I was very young, 17. Yeah. So I saw everything really young.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here. I wrote in my book, Life Leverage, about leveraging your time. Let's be honest, no one is getting less busy. And two things that have really changed my life in terms of information and the speed of information is audiobooks on 2x speed and podcasts like this. But there's a company I believe that are really changing the game. They're called Blinkist, and they condense the best books into 15-minute summaries. Blinkist have an ever-growing library. I personally really like Sapiens. I also like Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And I think you will like it when all my books are on there. So right now, for a limited time, Blinkist have a special offer that I've agreed with them just for my podcast listeners. You need to go to Blinkist.com/Rob to start your 7-day trial. And Blinkist is spelt B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. That's Blinkist.com/Rob to start your 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/Rob. Right, let's get back into the episode.
Round 4 is you turn pro, you won 18 fights straight off the bat. Was it 15 were stopped, something like that?
Something like that.
So take us on that journey before the famous Prescott fight.
Yeah, so I turned professional. Obviously, it's a little bit different to amateur boxing. Smaller gloves and no vest on.
Mm.
It's more longer rounds. We used to fight as an amateur for 2 minutes, and now it's gone up a minute, so 3 minutes now.
Yeah.
The rounds go from 3 rounds to 4 rounds to like 12 rounds, you know. So obviously we started to, you have to change your style of boxing. It's more rugged. Professional boxing is not all about hitting and moving and jumping around. It's about getting stuck in there, you know what I mean? Like feeling it.
Right.
Pushing your opponent back and sometimes having a little bit of a scuffle and holding and pushing him. It's a little bit more rougher. Amateur boxing is more nice and clean and bang, hit and move. But professional boxing, it is quite tough and ruthless. And so I had to totally change my style. I did that and had my first fight. I won it, stopped the guy in the first round, and then started getting in the groove of, you know, fighting these guys. And in my second fight, I ended up breaking my hand.
Again?
Yeah.
Blind, right there. Yeah.
So you see this. Now, I hit someone.
Your hand almost, it's got a bit of a glove on it.
It's crazy.
Battered.
So, you know, this hand, I only just had the operation done last year.
Right.
So I've never operated this hand. So I only did it after. So what happened? I hit the guy over the hand, overhand, right hand. And I snapped this area.
Yeah.
And but because my career was going quick and I was getting things done quick, and I couldn't afford to take time off like a year out to let my hand recover. So what I did was I was literally fighting with one hand again.
Right.
I took fight number 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 onwards.
You must have had a really good jab after
all
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then what happens is obviously all that cartilage makes it stronger.
Mm.
And then they need to have an operation. I just dealt with it.
Yeah.
At times after a fight, it would swell up. It will always, I'll have to ice it. Or even training camp when I'm boxing or sparring, it'll swell up.
Yeah.
I have to ice it. But in back of my mind, I was like, okay, I can't really throw a hard right hand. So I use my right hand more of a decoy, boom, get a left hook, you know, just get our backhand in, our left hook in, sorry. And so just keep my opponents busy with it, but never used to go in with it fully. And It was only recently I just had the operation. But anyway, so did all that, got through my whole 17 fights. The 18th fight, done a big deal with Sky, pay-per-view, massive promotion it was, against a guy called Prescott, and they said to me, look, this is a good fight for you. I was like, I was one of them fighters, I'll fight whoever you put me in front of.
Yeah.
And they said, this guy's had, I think he had about 20 fights and knocked out 19. I'm like, cool, you know, it's fine. I'll go, I'll take the fight. And took the fight, obviously got beat in the first round, got knocked out.
Carter's got this new trainer holding.
For years, people have been asking me where I buy my watches. Many of you may know I'm a watch collector, I'm a watch investor, and those as an asset class have done me very well in the last 15 years. I have never shared where I source my watches from or my watch dealer until now. My watch dealer used to be a professional footballer for Manchester United, and he formed a watch brand called Broadwalk. And he sources the higher-end brands like Rolex, Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe and Richard Mille. I trust him, I've used him for many years, and recently we've done a partnership. Hence, I'm inviting you, if you want to start investing in watches and protect your money from the banks and inflation, to check out Broadwalk. That's Broadwalk. And the website is broadwalkgroup.com. The email is sales@broadwalkgroup.com. And please don't share this, but his number is 07496 878153. Obviously, only message him if you're serious about buying and investing in the higher end watches. People have been asking me for years, and for the first time ever, you can get access to my watch team.
A lot of people after that said, should we retire now? See, I had a lot of haters, man. I had a lot of haters then, because they thought, being so young, he's got a big name and he's made so much money in the sport. And this is even before winning a world title. But obviously, it was because obviously I was, you know, I marketed myself well. And obviously, that's the reason. But when I got beat, I literally lost a lot of people around me. Sponsorship deals, everyone, because they thought I was done then.
Really?
You know, and a lot of people follow what newspapers say. So a lot of the news people did put me down as well, saying that, you know, Amir got beat and I think that's him done. So that was such a big motivation for me to come back stronger from it.
Right.
And it was the best thing that ever happened in my career, because if that didn't happen then, you know, it would have, like, I would never have won the world titles I won won the big fights I did, because that in a way made me refocus and thought, you know, things can go wrong in life and you have to stay focused throughout your whole career. Even if you get beat, you have to come back stronger from it. Mm-hmm. And the doubters kind of motivated me as well.
Right.
So then I went back, changed my whole training camp. I moved to America, trained with Freddie Roach. After two fights after getting beat by Prescott, knocked out by Prescott, I was a world champion.
Yeah.
And no one, you say what you want, but after two fights of literally getting knocked out, people talking, saying that you are finished, I came back for Ocean Fagan and for Antonio Barrera, the big legendary name. I beat him, and then after that, I was a world champion.
Yeah.
Beating Kotelnik. So, you know, it's been a tough run, man. I've had a career where people have supported me, then dropped me, and then come back to support me again. So, yeah, it's not an easy sport, man.
What's happening in this game, okay?
Listen.
All right, you're doing great. Stay focused. No problem. You stay focused.
3 minutes.
The new WBA light welterweight champion of the world, Amir Khan.
Take a bow, Amir Khan, Britain's latest and newest champion of the world.
When you lost to Prescott, do you think you're underprepared? Do you think you were complacent? Or do you just think it took you by surprise? Or do you think that can just happen in boxing?
Look, it can just happen in boxing. Yeah. Obviously, I went in the fight. I always train hard for every fight.
Yeah.
And Maybe I took my eye off the game for 1 second and he caught me.
That's all it needs.
That's all it takes, man. It was only one big shot, you know, that did it. So really, it wasn't like I was getting outboxed. It was just that one big shot, boom.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So yeah, we'll take a couple of questions from you. Shout out the names as well.
Cool. So this is from Mambina. What advice would you give to teenagers who had a similar upbringing to you?
My advice to teenagers, just stay focused in life. Keep working hard. Never give up. Have dreams and have goals in life. You know, this is where we all go wrong. We don't have goals or ambitions. If we have goals and ambitions, chase them, because then you wake up every morning, you'd be like, I want to be something. What do you want to be? You know, instead of waking up in the morning and not even having a clue or not even knowing where you want to be. And like, the way I go with life is I want to know where I want to think, where I want to be in the next 10 years. Where do I want to be in 10 years time? You know, so obviously you could do that. Maybe where do you want to be in the next, if you're younger than me, you know, you might want to say, I want to see where I want to be in the next 5 years. Then just put some goals and ambitions out there and just chase them.
We should ask him that at the end. Where do you want to be in the next 10 years?
I mean, for me, in 10 years' time, like, I think I'll be probably well retired from boxing. Well retired, yeah. Oh, that'd be crazy if I'm still fighting. You know what I mean? Yeah. But look, I'll be well retired. I want to do a lot of charity work. At the Amir Khan Foundation, I want to do a lot of charity work and help the less fortunate people and use my name the right way. A lot of people said to me, why do you become president or prime minister of Pakistan? I'm like, I leave that out. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I get loads of things sort of thrown at me. Look, doing a bit of TV work, talking boxing. I love talking boxing, commentating and stuff. So I'll keep myself busy somehow. But for me, it'll be charity work, TV work. They're the main two things.
Mm.
But and look after my kids, you know, bring them up the right way.
Yeah, great. We'll take one more, yeah?
Cool. Amir, you're on many social media platforms, most recently TikTok. How are you finding that?
Oh, yeah, give us some TikTok tips.
You know what? Mate, I've got no tips. See, you need to give me some. Yeah, so you guys have to give me some tips. So basically on TikTok, I'm quite new on it. And I don't know how to post videos. I just see a video I like and I just post it on there with some music on or whatever.
Yeah.
But I see people doing like TikTok videos where they're doing like edits and
stuff
like that.
That's what he did.
Yeah,
he lip-synced something and got hundreds of thousands of views.
Really?
I know.
Wow. Yeah. See, that's what I need to do, man. Yeah. I'm in the wrong thing. We'll do one after this. I'm going to do one today then. I'm going to do one. But yeah, I find it good. I find TikTok's fun. See, you know who got me onto it? Was my daughter. My daughter's always on TikTok. I'm thinking, what's she on? Like, she's going through TikTok and I'm like, what is this thing? On my phone, she's downloaded it and everything. And then I went on it and then I decided to make an account and then it just blew up.
Yeah.
Nice. Following grew quick as well, didn't it? What's
up? But 200 or 300,000.
Wow.
Yeah, you've only had it, what, a couple months?
No, just less than a month. Yeah. Less than a month. Because I remember I opened it when I was in Dubai. Nice. So it was only about 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
300K in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy. Let's hope it keeps going up. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because sometimes, you know, you go up and it just pauses then. And then you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
So we don't want it to pause. We want to just keep on going up.
Well, I think you got in it pretty early. That's the key, I think, as well, isn't it? Getting in some of these platforms.
Yeah. A lot of these platforms, you have to get on there early and also you have to give people the content that they want to see, you know? And they want to see a side of you. That's the reason I'm quite big on social media myself, because I want people to see me, the real side of me.
Yeah.
See, when they normally see people around fight times and they might see you a bit arrogant, a bit full of yourself, but you have to be, because you've got someone in front of you that wants to knock your head off.
Yeah.
So you have to be confident.
Yeah.
And by being confident, you might come across cocky, but it's not that. It's just that you have to believe in yourself, you know? And people might not like that attitude. But when they see me or when they meet me, I've never had a bad word. They've said, you know, they've always said, wow, we never expected you to be like this. I'm like, I'm a normal guy, you know?
Yeah. Round five then. Did you doubt yourself? Or how did that defeat feel for you the first time in front of so many people? Take us through that.
It was a pay-per-view fight. There was about, it was a full house at the MEN Arena. And must have been about 18,000 people there. And when I lost that fight, I was like, wow.
Because people forget, you're not just getting knocked out, you're getting knocked out in front of the whole world.
Yeah, exactly. And the fight was shown in America and everywhere, all over the world. And it was quite embarrassing at the time. I was like, oh man, I got knocked out in front of so many people. But then there's a few messages I was getting which were very supportive, saying, look, it takes a tough man and a big man to stand up. the way I did, because I remember when I got beat, I did a media press conference the next day with everyone, not hiding away. I didn't hide away from anyone. Mm. And people respected that. And I even went out. I had some thing, bookings where I had to do some events, and I still went there.
Yeah.
People were like, wow, you know, you just got knocked out. And obviously you still showed your face to thousands and millions of people. I go, that's the way it is, you know. Mm. It's boxing for you end of the day. I can't hide away. I'm going to come back stronger from it. And that's what I did.
Another round looks as though it's heading Mexico's way. Oh, it certainly is now. Huge right hand and Khan down. And is he going to get up? It doesn't look like it. I think it's all over right here. The tactics were right, but he couldn't keep him off, could he? And he was pretty much out as he hit the canvas.
So round six then. Defeats to Danny Garcia, Lamont Peterson, Canelo Alvarez. Did you ever start doubting yourself? I mean, obviously, you've won way more fights than you've lost. But how did you come back from those defeats? How did you feel with those?
Yeah, the way I came back from them was just by just regrouping myself, watching what mistakes I was making. So every time I got beat, I would change my style a little bit just to kind of... See, I'm a little bit older now. It's going to be a little bit harder for me to change my style now. I am what I am. But there did come a time where, you know, I did start changing my style because I didn't want to get caught with the same shot. So why did I get beat? Why did I get hurt in those fights? So then I had to totally change my style a little bit, change my way of thinking of going into fights.
From what to what?
From, like, you know, being too confident, to being a little bit more low-key and just staying focused and doing a lot of media work. I had to stop that as well.
Right.
You know,
why? Is it distracting?
Because it's very distracting. Yeah. I mean, after like a long day of training, you got like an hour, 2 hours of media interviews. It takes a lot of you. So I had to kind of stop a lot of things around me. And then obviously a lot of videos going out when I'm training. So I used to post my own videos out. I used to have TV crews come in, video recording my training. I'm giving away my game plan.
Yeah.
My opponent's probably looking at that thinking, oh, this, look at him. I've seen him put his left hand down. I'm going to catch him over the top of the right hand. So I started giving away a lot of things, you know?
Right.
And I think that's what a big turning point was for me to stop all that and to change that, all that. Yeah.
And when you have a few defeats in the ring, how does it affect you out of the ring in your sort of general life?
You know what? Me as a person, I've always been very calm. I've never seen myself being a massive name or someone who's special, you know what I mean? I see myself as a normal person, and people have always treated me normal. You'll get a lot of hate and stuff, people saying, oh yeah, you got knocked out, ha ha, whatever. Yeah. They'll mention the guys' names, like Prescott beat you. Yeah. I'm like, I don't really care, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
you
know, doesn't matter who beats you, does it?
It is what it is, man. I'm like, I smile at them and just walk away.
Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of outside started happening quite a lot. But I mean, it's just life, isn't it? People like to have a little go at you when you're at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've realized. When you're at the bottom, everyone wants to have a go at you and point a finger.
Right.
But when you're at the top, they're afraid to say a word to you, you know?
So. Yeah. And probably want to know you.
I want to know you and I want to hang out with you. Yeah, you're right there as well. Yeah, you're 100% and take a picture with you and stuff. But still, you know, I have to say, like, even after defeats and stuff, I still got a lot of love, man. Like, even when I would go back to Pakistan, you know, I'll get so much love from that country.
Yeah.
And the people in Pakistan, in a way, helped me to get over them losses because... The love I got from the people in Pakistan.
Well, we got one who loves you over there, another Khan over there.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, the love I got in Pakistan was... See, the love in the UK is a little bit different. Yeah, UK Pakistanis are a little bit different to the Pakistanis over there. See, the Pakistanis in Pakistan are different because they don't have much to follow. Cricket is the only sport. Then they started to follow boxing because of me. And then they started supporting me and, like, they would... meet me and cry when they meet me, like they can't believe they've met me and they saw me as their superhero and everything. And they, because I was still getting the love from them, maybe in the UK I won't get the same kind of love after having beat. But one thing I can say about Pakistan, the love was so strong. And then, like I said, I'm back winning again in boxing. Now the UK is back loving you again.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing about like the UK, you're going to have love up and it's going to go up and down. Now, I didn't mention it before, and in Joshua, when he got beat, you know, a lot of people probably, like, well, what he said out there was, I'm going to prove all the haters wrong, and I'm going to, all the critics that put me down, I'm going to prove them wrong. And after he won, he had to say something about those haters and them, the people who criticize him. So it shows that it does hurt a fighter.
Yeah.
Even though you might not show it, but it does hurt us, man. Mm. See, I didn't show it that way. I didn't want to give them that benefit of doubt that, you know, they know they're getting to me.
Yeah.
But Andy Joshua obviously must have got to him, so that's why he had to mention it.
Right.
On TV, you know. But yeah, it does hurt you, you know, when yeah, people talk bad about you, put you down. We're only doing something that we love to do. And obviously you guys like what we do, and obviously we like to entertain you. So yeah, why this?
Yeah, well, we'll come to that in round eight, because yeah, I think actually it's a great thing to talk about, because I think we all get criticised, and people who have got it a lot more can really help people who've got it. I mean, you definitely never know when your kid's going to get it at school. You never know when you're going to get it.
You see the transition right there where he stepped back. I think it's right there. Yeah, clearly it was a low blow. Ooh.
This fight's being stopped because of that.
You got low blow, didn't you? I think it was Terence Crawford. Yes. Did you, like, you abandoned that fight after that, did you?
Yeah, you know, so when I, obviously the fight was hard, it was tough. I was slowly getting back into the fight again. You know what I mean? I was, first round, he caught me with a good shot, more of a flash knockdown, caught me cold. After I started getting back into, getting myself back in the game, he was very technical, very good. Obviously, when I was hit with the low shot, in, I think it must have been the fourth or the fifth or something. It's, I don't know what round it was now. I mean, fifth was it?
Yeah.
It was one of them shots which took everything out of me.
Really?
I mean, look, you've got all that adrenaline in your body. You will still fight. But you know when a shot, when you get hit in the balls with a shot, it does take everything at you.
Yeah.
I literally thought I've done about 24 rounds after that. I was walking thinking, why do I have my legs feel so weak? Why am I, and I thought, like, if I carry on, then I'm going to make it so easy for my opponent to destroy me. I'm going into getting destroyed then, because I'm not even 100%. So the cornerman asked me, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. I'll carry on. I'm going to go. And then he saw in my eyes, look, I'm a guy, my trainers see me knock guys out in sparring, have a 12 to 24 rounds of sparring, and I've had wars in the gym, and he knows what I'm like. So he must have looked in my eyes and seen that, look, I wasn't in the right position to continue. Yeah. And that's the reason I didn't fight.
Yeah.
And that's the reason he pulled me out. He said, look, call the fight off.
Yeah.
And when people say, oh yeah, it was the easy way out, I mean, I'm a warrior. I would fight till I die. I'm one of them type of guys. You know, I'm never afraid of anyone.
Please don't look at me like that when you said that. You gave me that look.
You know,
yeah.
You know, I'm that's the type of guy.
We're in your house. We're being respectful.
Yeah, I know that. But that's the type of guy I am. And it's just how then people try to twist it and say, you pulled out, you were scared, you were getting beat.
Well, you know, I would actually say that's fucking brave. Yeah. Because you would have known the shit you would have got for pulling out.
Yeah.
So you could look at it the other way and say, it's really brave.
Yeah. See, because I thought to myself that, like, but to be honest with you, I didn't really want to quit.
Right.
It was, so it was my corner. So I was a little bit angry on that.
Right. Do you think they made the right decision looking at it?
You know what? Maybe, yeah. Because, look, I have to give Virgil Hunter a lot of respect. He's a very good trainer. And I think the reason he probably stopped it was because he thought, if Amir does continue, then he can get hurt quite badly.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's a gutsy fighter, whatever, but he's not really in there.
Well, it shows he had your best interests at heart.
So he had me, exactly. So a lot of respect for him there. Mm. And I have to say that all trainers should have the best interests for their fighters all the time. Yeah.
Okay, great. So this links us nicely to round eight,
yeah,
which is about criticism and the haters. And you've talked about that a fair bit, but let's sort of detail that.
Mm.
So I think there's the kind of, like, you know, you're a shit fighter, you should retire, kind of hate, criticism. And then there's the nastier stuff. Mm. I guess you must have experienced it
all. I've experienced everything, man. From colour, race, being the shittest boxer in the world, getting knocked out.
I'm the shittest boxer in the world.
Supposedly I am.
Yeah.
To some people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I laugh at it all, honestly. You know,
people, so it doesn't ever bother you?
It never bothers me. Honestly, like, people are just wasting their time writing stuff like that, because it does not bother me. And I kind of laugh at it. And in a way, Like, it's just like you're going through your Instagram or your Twitter and you're like, oh, you're shit. You go past it. Like,
yeah.
Automatically, you don't even read it sometimes. You're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Some idiot there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know
what it is. Have you ever gone in and had a bit of a ding-dong with someone and replied?
No, never. Because it never gets to me. No. That's why it never gets to me and I don't need to. And I think to myself, I'm not going to waste my breath.
Yeah.
Or waste my energy to get into a little argument with someone. You can always have haters. The day the haters stop is the day you think, have I still got it or not? Because the hate is always going to be there. When you're successful in life, you're always going to have haters. Mm. Remember that.
Yeah. So it really never gets to you, ever.
Never, I swear.
Never, ever.
I swear, never. I swear. Like, I never let
it doesn't motivate you either. Because, you know, some people, having critics motivates them to succeed.
Yeah. See, with me, I've never really let it get to me that bad where I needed to motivate me then. I'm a very calm guy. I've always been chilled. I read it and I think, just talking shit whatever. About me, whatever. Like, it's like more like whatever.
Yeah.
And I move on to the next one. Mm. See, because I get so much love on there, that in a way destroys all the hate messages. Because I'll probably get about 50 hate messages, 5,000 love, nice messages. And I'll be like, wow. Like, at least I've got a lot of people there. And they're the people who really like you and who really trust you and stuff. Yeah. But the hate's always going to be there, you know, sort of things.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point you make, because if you focus on one hater, the 95 or 98% of people who love you, they're not getting your attention. Yeah, surely your attention, you should be giving them your attention.
Exactly. And one day, you know, one day them haters, they're going to read all the good comments as well. They're going to be like, wait a minute, you know, Amir is maybe a nice guy. And why are people saying so many good things about him? And the worst is, like, the funniest thing that's ever happened, I've met people and they might not have liked me before. And they've met me and said, wow, like, can I shake your hand? I'm like, yeah, cool, bro. And they've said, we used to hate you. Like, we've never liked you. We used to think you're full of yourself or you're this, you're that. But now I've met you in person, I have to say, like, you're a good guy, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? I mean, I'm a simple guy. I've always been the way I am. You know what I mean? I'm not one that's hiding or being something I'm not. You know what I mean? I've always been me. You know what I mean? That's just me.
Ooh.
But it's crazy. But it does make you happy a little bit when you do get a guy who used to be a hater and then shakes hands and says, you know what, bro, I like you now.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, what did I do wrong in the first place?
Yeah. Well, I think often people who are judging you, who don't know you, really are just... is coming from something in them rather than something in you, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. So I let it be, innit?
Yeah.
It's nice when someone does that.
Yeah.
You know, especially when they've hated you and then they end up liking you and saying nice things about you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said, Amir, that you thought that Anthony Joshua maybe was quite motivated by the critics. Seeing as it doesn't bother you, do you think that's a bad thing, that some people are motivated to prove the critics wrong, or do you think that's just what works for them?
It's just what works for them, really, because... If I try to do that, then I might make more mistakes going into a fight, trying too hard and then get caught again.
Yeah.
So you have to be, you never let them get to you, really.
Mm.
Just let them say whatever and you just say, thank you very much and just let it be.
Mm. All right, great. So round 9 now is the business and money. You got one you want to ask?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, fire away. We'll do this one. Yeah. Nice and loud.
Were you inspired by Prince Nazim in his day? How would you analyze his boxing style, and would you fight him?
Okay, who's that from?
That is from Tushar.
Okay.
Prince Nazim Mohammed obviously was a world champion at the time when I was starting boxing. I used to watch his videos 100%. I was a fan, and what he did for boxing was amazing. Brought a lot of entertainment to it and everything else. And would I have fought him? Maybe we were different weight categories, but look, if the fight was there, like, I'm not one to ever say no to any fight, but we are friends as well, me and us, and I respect what he's done in the game, and he's had some brilliant fights, man. You can't take anything away from him. Beat some big names, but his entertainment was what catches.
Yeah, he made everyone talk.
He made everyone talk, you know?
Entrance into the ring. Yeah.
But it was good. Yeah, he was good, but like I said, if we had fought each other, maybe it would have happened if we were in the same... if we were fighting around the same weight and if we were fighting around the same time.
Is there any more on there?
Yeah, we've got another one. It's a bit more fitness related rather than boxing. Amir, do you believe in overtraining and do you ever feel like you've gone into a fight not at 100%?
Yeah, so when I fought against Danny Garcia, I think I was overtrained because I did a full training camp, and then with Lamont Peterson in the rematch, that fight got called off because he was tested positive. So then 2 weeks later, I was back in training camp again for another 7 weeks for a fight against Daniel Garcia. I went in the fight flat. I went in the fight like I needed a break, I needed a holiday. You know, and you know, there comes a time in training camp when you're like, normally when you're like 9-10 weeks away, you think you're peaking. You're like, I just cannot wait to get this fight over with so I can go on a holiday and eat what I want and do what I want. You know, sleep at what time I want. But see, that happened to me. And then 2 weeks later, I was back in a camp again for another 7 weeks. So I went in there, just burnt out really. You know, wanted to just get the fight over with and wanted to knock him out quickly, just go and have a break. And obviously end up getting caught, but it is one of them things, you know. So overtraining does happen, and you have to be very smart, and you have to let, just go with how your body feels. Always trust the body.
The marketing side of boxing.
Yeah.
We were just talking about Conor. You've got, you met him over there. Yeah. Obviously, he's been great for UFC.
Yeah, definitely.
And Prince Nassim was great at the hype and getting everyone talking about it. Is that something you've ever thought of, you're aware of, or do you just go and do your job?
No, I just go and do my job, man, and just stay focused and do what I have to do best.
Why don't you get into the hype side of it?
I don't have to because people love my style. People like my exciting style and explosive style.
Yeah.
They like the knockouts, they like the speed, the power, the movement. They love everything about me. So I'm like, I don't have to do
that
too much to show. Yeah, I'd let my fist do my talking.
Really. Yeah, love it. All right, so round nine, you're a businessman as well. You've got, I believe you, have you got a UFC MMA style company in India, is that right?
Yeah, so we've got MMA called Super Fight League in India. We've also got Super Boxing League in India as well, and now moving that to other parts of the world, to Pakistan and Asia and Philippines and everywhere. And so these are the two companies I have with my partner Bill Dosanjh. So it's all about giving the locals a chance to fight, and then having local teams in, say for example in India, we've got Delhi, Mumbai, we've got all different cities, where then each city has its own team of boxers who then fight another. It's like football, how football is. You've got Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United, you've got all the teams there, just same as this.
Yeah.
We've gone with the team concept.
Right.
So, and it's each fight is all about points. So if you get a knockout, you get the most points.
Yeah.
Which is 8 points. You get a stoppage, it's 5 points. You get if the referee stops it, it's 5 points. And if it's a loss, you get 0 points. And if it's a draw, you both parties get 3 points. So it's a point system. So I've seen it happen where the guys have gone into the final fight, two teams. So you got Team Delhi and Team Mumbai. They've gone into the finals and they are 5 points down or 6 points down and they're looking for a knockout.
Yeah.
They're looking for a knockout.
It must make it exciting.
Mate, these guys go out and try looking for that because they know if they get a knockout, they get 8 points.
Yeah.
So they're going for a knockout, and you know what happens then when you're looking for a knockout?
They get knocked out. Yeah.
Mate, I've seen it 2-3 times. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And everyone's on the edge of the seats, and they're really short fights, like 3-round fights, but exciting as well. So you know, that's one business I'm into. Hopefully moving that to different regions in the world and getting out there to different places. China is one, and you know, taking to different places like that. So let's hope that goes well. And
do you enjoy the business side of boxing?
Enjoy it, man. I'm like a promoter as well. I have the American promotion, which is promoting young fighters and helping them. So obviously we opened the door to Saudi Arabia boxing. So we are doing big events over there. We're doing big events worldwide, really. And obviously the last big one I did was in America for the Crawford fight. American promotion helped out with Top Rank promotion. So I keep myself busy. With the promotional side is where we promote young fighters, give them an opportunity to go for big fights and win titles one day, just like what I went through.
Yeah.
I know that with my experience, I can help these young fighters to go forward.
Yeah. Are you motivated?
Because I'm experienced, Anna.
Yeah.
I've got the experience behind me.
Yeah.
That's the reason I would want to maybe help them.
Yeah. Would you say you're motivated by money?
No, look, money motivates anyone because like, yeah, definitely. You know, we are prize fighters, I say. We fighters that fight and obviously we get paid for winning or losing. So we prize fighters. So yeah, 100%. You have that motivation because you want to give it. You want you want your family to live a good life.
Yeah.
You want your people around you to live a good life. Mm. So yeah, definitely, we are money motivated.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's nice for someone to be honest about that, because a lot of people aren't honest about that.
People are going to be honest, but yeah, you tell them to fight for free then.
Yeah.
They're not going to. No. You tell them to work for free. They're not going to. People, everyone in the world has to be money motivated, because you want to look after. And I'm not money motivated for me. I'm more motivated about giving it to my family, having them to live a good life, but not a spoiled life.
Yeah.
So if someone says they're not money motivated, I think it's nonsense.
Yeah. Great. Now, I read up something that... you're apparently, and correct me if I'm right or wrong, apparently you're very sensible with money, and you said you could have a fleet of cars, but you're not really a big spender. So is that true, and is that right?
Yeah, definitely true. You know, I'll get to enjoy one or two cars which I like. I buy them, and then I just get rid of them, whatever. But I don't need 10 cars parked outside.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not one of them. I've seen celebrities make that mistake, and then I've seen how broke they are afterwards. And I'm like, wow, that person used to have about 10 cars parked up. And they were like 10 amazing cars. So, you know, from stuff like that, like, I've never really been... I like my watches and stuff. Like, you had the AP on as well.
Yeah, and you.
You like the APs on. But I like my watches. So I collect watches now, but I like to collect them only after I win a fight. So I like to collect it and treat myself after winning a fight. I'm like, oh, I can buy a watch now.
Yeah.
So I remember watch fight. I won this. And
So you're using it as like a reward.
As a reward, yeah. But
APs have gone up a lot of them, quite a lot as
exactly, well. Exactly, yeah. So they're up in prices. Yeah. So you're laughing there. Yeah. Well, it's like an investment as well. You know, I mean, and then you can pass them on to your kids once you grow up. You know, but yeah, it's so yeah, it's one of them things. You know, I'm not full money because I know how hard it is to earn and how hard it is to make that money. So I'm not one of them to splash it on silly things or invest it in silly things. I want my money to make money. Basically, that's what I want to do. And also, I'm not one to just buy silly things. Cars, for example, you only drive one car. Why do you need 10 for? I mean, have two or three may be the most, but not 10. Yeah, I mean, not gonna.
They're laughing at me. I've got a few cars. Yeah.
Oh, you like cars? I mean, you got 10. Don't say you got 10.
No, I haven't got 10. I had six at one point. Actually, I got rid of two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a 750 brake GTR. That was just sat in the garage, never used it. I had an Ariel Atom, which can get reinsured on. I've got an Aventador. That goes wrong all the time. So I'm kind of sitting here like, but I also kind of agree with you as well. I've got a Panamera Turbo, and that's the one I like to drive every day.
So you got the love for the cars.
Yeah.
Definitely. See, I love cars as well. So I've said once I move to another house, I'm going to buy myself a nice Ferrari 488 probably.
I just like
the way it looks. Slick car. And I'm a little bit older now as well, where I'm a little bit
33.
So I'm not as silly as I used to be a little boy. It's just I used to be loved to, you just got caught speeding and all that, but all them days have gone now. So I've grown out of that.
Yeah.
And I'm back.
I need to grow out of all this.
Just go to a track day and just go mad. I got like I want to buy myself a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Like either a Wraith or a Dawn. Just nice. Then I'm just going to chill.
Yeah, you won't want to speed in one of those, will you?
You don't want to speed in one of them. Not even a Ferrari, you know what I mean? You want to cruise in it.
Yeah.
But let's see. So yeah, let's see how it goes, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I am going to speed, like I said, a track day is the one.
Yeah,
get in my system.
Yes.
But no, when you get older, I mean, how old are you now?
40.
Shit.
I know.
You're going through midlife crisis.
I am going through
a bit of a midlife crisis. So yeah.
And we're doing the cheeky.
What's a cheeky
and then
one?
The quick fire. Yeah, this is a new thing.
You might be getting a punch for this one. The cheeky.
No. I did kickboxing for a while. I had two martial arts brown belts. Amateur fights. Yeah, I do. I got hit in the solar plexus once. I couldn't move my whole body.
Yeah,
I just couldn't move. And when you said about you're below the belt,
you know,
exactly, I actually know how that feels. Couldn't move anything.
But you got hit in there. But imagine the pulled, bro.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. But yeah, solar plexus is a motherfucker.
She couldn't feel anything. Couldn't breathe. Couldn't do anything. Shot.
Like, you know, like, even like when a football hits you, like when you play football, boom, but it takes your air away. Big time. But it's the worst pain in the world. I'm telling you, man, when you get punched there. I've sparred sometimes and I've like gone in there and someone's caught me with a peach of a shot in the solar plexus. And I've been like, fuck, but you don't want to show it.
Yeah.
But you're dying. Yeah. I swear I have to cover my face, like, but like, and I'm screaming behind my gloves, like, thinking,
Do people ever get knocked out in just sparring?
Yeah, loads of people.
And you don't wear headgear in sparring?
You wear headgear, but you might just cut someone with a good shot.
Oh, right. Put them down. Yeah. And did you ever get to, sometimes sparring got a bit too intense?
Yeah, and the referee has to jump in. Well, the coach has to, normally it's not referees, it's the coach then. He's like, guys.
We're just sparring, calm down. Man,
but we go, sometimes you go just war.
Yeah.
Because you have to remember, we're sparring guys who are from different gyms, and they are also same weight, and they want to prove themselves. They want to prove themselves. They want to be in your position.
Yeah.
They want to try a little bit too hard, and they might go too hard, and you have to go hard back on them because you have to tell them who the boss is.
Yeah.
And then it might get a little bit out of hand.
Mm. Is this the cheeky round now?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about, but yeah.
Well, we're doing this test just to try and make them fun as well.
Right.
So about four rounds ago, we were interviewing David Lloyd, who had all the gyms.
Okay, nice.
And we started the cheeky round with him. And hey, look, if you hate it, then just don't hit me. As long as you don't hit me, that's all good. All right, so how do you think you would have done against Nassim Hamed his prime and your prime?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it would have been a very good fight for me, and I think I would have beaten him because he's more speed is what beats Nassim Hamed, and a tight guard, bang, 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 and just in and out.
Yeah.
I think I would have
You'd have done him. Yeah, what about Floyd?
Floyd is a lot trickier because his defense is so good, and he'd make you throw a lot of shots and defend them and just come with one. So it would be a hard fight, 50-55, but I still think that, you know, the speed I have, he's never faced before. And the problem I could cause him is something that no other fighter has ever given him.
Yeah.
So that's what gives it that little different look in that fight. But it's 50-50 fight, hard to say.
Okay, great. You don't seem to do really any trash talk. But there must be one person on this planet you would love to trash talk. One person who gets under your skin. Someone that you just want to give some trash to. I know that's not how you roll, but...
Probably Kell Brook, man. I don't like the guy. I just think he gives it the big ones. He just talks nothing but nonsense. All he says is just rubbish. And I just feel that... Just looking for that payday he is. And it does make me a little bit angry. I mean, I think the fight between me and him would have happened a long time ago, but because he's so disrespectful and so stupid and says silly things, the fight's never happened.
Right.
It's not going to happen if he keeps on going on about like that, if he's going to keep on going on like this. So, he'll be fighting someone else. He'll have someone else he's got to take care of, but he'd be talking about me.
Yeah,
I'm like, bro, you got a fight coming, so you better be focusing on that. But yeah, he's one guy which I probably like.
Fair enough. Are you allowed to say what the most you've ever earned from one fight? It's a cheeky question,
a cheeky question, yeah.
I suppose they've got to be. The next one's even more cheeky, by the way. So.
Yeah. Probably about $15 million.
Wow. One fight.
Yeah.
Nice. Not all right. Lot of APs with that. And boxers seem to talk a lot about not having sex before a fight. And we were discussing this in the car on the way down. What's the longest we would do? So Kieran's about 4 minutes. I could probably do a few days. What's the longest you've ever gone without it before a fight?
Probably the night before. I'm just
kidding. Night before.
It's... It's been about 8 weeks. Eight weeks.
I mean, on purpose,
on purpose, yeah, because you're so, think about it.
Is that really a thing, though? Does that really make you a better fighter?
I don't think it affects anything, but because you're so focused on what you have to do, you have a big fight coming up, you have training, you're training so hard throughout the day, twice a day, maybe three times a day, you got massages and everything, and these massages are like pure hard, like them sports massages, and your body's aching. Last thing you want to do is have sex. Last thing you want...
But what if you just laid back and...
but it doesn't work like that because you just... You have no energy and you think, oh, mate,
eight weeks, man. Yeah. Wow, I actually really respect you for that.
That's what it's all about because the hard work we have to put our body through and everything, you're like, forget that, man.
But do you think it like makes a better fighter? Because some people say
that, don't
they?
I don't know, it's hard to say. That's what they say, but I don't know.
No, nor do I.
Like, so I'm not doing it the night before, so I don't even know, I mean, that what's the difference between not doing it?
You haven't done like a split test.
I've not done a test, no.
No.
So, but yeah, you just don't know. It's how your body is really as well,
Yeah. All right, cool. Quick fire then. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice. Look after your money and don't just throw it up to silly things or invest in silly things.
Mm. And you've been really careful, have you, with
that? You have to be very careful. Yeah, because it's easy to make, but easy... Well, it's hard to make, but easy to burn.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, there is a question on here, which is quite cool. 15 million in one fight. What's like the most extravagant thing you've bought? Like the most like crazy, outrageous money you've spent? Because didn't you spend 75 grand on your daughter's birthday?
It was 70 grand on my daughter's birthday. It was just something, because we never did a first birthday and second, so we did a really big one for her. Yeah. So I did a really big one for Lamaisa.
Yeah. Anything outrageous you've bought?
No, but I'm worth looking at doing that soon, though.
With what?
Buying a house. So, yeah.
But I mean, that's practical as well.
Yeah, it's more
isn't
practical,
it?
Isn't it? But outrageous. Putting my watches, really.
Yeah.
I bought some sick watches, man. I've gone way out of my league on watches. The next day I thought, why the hell did I just spend that kind of money on it? Because I wore it and I'm like, I've got the taste of having it on, then I'm like, I really did I spend this kind of money on it?
Yeah.
So I'm like,
so most expensive watch?
By about 105 grand.
Mm. It's good money.
It's wrong though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, if it's a Patek or an AP, you can justify it because it'll go up.
Mine wasn't. Mine was some fancy diamond. Which really, I bought it the next day when I walked out with it, probably dropped half the money straight away. Yeah. And I was like killing myself afterwards. But look, I've done it. I've been there, done it. Yeah. And you know what? This is one of the reasons why now it's totally changed my whole mindset on everything, because now I love doing charity work. I appreciate every penny I make now.
Yeah.
And I don't like spending it because look, there's poor people out there in the world. I've just spent about 100 grand on a watch. Well, I'm thinking, wait a minute, what could that do to these poor people?
Yeah.
I could probably feed a whole country for a week, you know, with that kind of money. So, what I do now, instead of me buying anything, any jewelry or anything now, I just fund it back into my foundation. I put it all in there and I go and help the poor people.
Great. Love it. What's the worst advice you ever received?
The worst advice is, if you like something, just go and buy it. You know, because that's what I did when I made that mistake with the watch.
Yeah.
So when you like something, just go and buy it. I'm like, no, you should think about it once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just going mad and saying, I'm going to buy that. Mm. I mean, if I was like that, I'd probably be broke now because I like a lot of things, but you know what I mean? Not going to go buy it. So probably it's a bit of a silly advice someone gave me.
Yeah.
If you like something, just buy it.
Mm. And actually, managing your money well probably means you can manage your fights better because you don't just have to take fights to make the payday.
Exactly, definitely. You know, so you have to be very smart which fights you take, which fights you don't need to take.
How do you mean by smart?
Smart in a way where, you know, why take risky fights with little... Like, for example, if there's two fights out there, one with high risk, one with low risk, but they're making the same kind of money and the reward is the same, then you'd rather go with the low risk one because you know the business now. So why should I, like, and I've done that a couple of times where I've taken a low risk fight for very high reward, but then I've done it on the other side as well. I've taken a high risk fight for another high reward. So I've always been quite smart that way as well because I like to be involved in it myself.
Mm.
You know, you'd be involved in a lot of the negotiation myself and giving my input as well. Because at the end of the day, you're making that money. You know, you're gonna be the one going into that ring, taking that punch to the head. So
you'd
like to make sure that, you know, everything's right.
Yeah, great. Is there one thing that you feel is really wrong with the world that you'd like to change?
I think the world needs peace. You know, with all this problems happening now around the world, a lot of countries now fighting each other, killing innocent people. You got India, you got Pakistan, who are neighbors who are killing each other. You know, why there should be peace everywhere in the world. They all need to sit down and resolve this situation by speaking to each other instead of sending bombs over to one country and stuff like that. And we've seen that quite a lot lately. A lot of these countries now are not talking with their mouth. They're talking with firearms, talking with bullets, talking with bombs. And I think that's one thing I would love to stop.
Yeah, great. There's a common question on podcasts, which I don't like to ask just because everyone does. And it's a good question. And it's, what advice would you give your younger self? So I'm going to flip it on its head. What advice would you give your older self? So let's say 42, 45, something like that. What advice would you give the older you?
That's a That's a bit of a strange one.
I would say good.
It's a bit of a hard one. You know? I mean, that's a very hard one.
But as a boxer, maybe, you know, you could still be fighting at 42. I know you said...
See, my advice would be retire from boxing. Yeah. Not be fighting at 42.
Yeah, great.
You know what I mean? Advice. At 42, you have to be retired, looking after your family.
Yeah.
Having some good investments, being smart, investing your money, which will give you a good return, and sit back and relax and look after your kids and help them grow and be something in life.
Yeah, there you go. Turned out to be a good question. Well, actually, a better answer than the question.
Yeah, but you know what? It's the question I've never been asked before, so I had to do a little bit of thinking then, yeah. So, good question.
Thank you very much. Is there one person alive that you think, you know what, we should have as a guest on this show? You know, who would you love to see if you were watching the show? Who would you get excited about us having on this show?
Can
be anyone, anywhere, any walk of life.
I think it would be good if you had someone like Prince Nassim Ahmed on here. Just to, maybe because, see, one thing about Prince Nassim Ahmed is he never really give a lot of insight about his life, the way he is as a person. No one really knows much about him, you know. He's quite quiet, keeps a lot of things to himself.
Mm.
You know, something like this would be really good for him. People will get to know what he's really like. And,
yeah.
And look, he's a lovely guy. I met him a couple of times and I know a lot about him now. But Naz is one of them type of guys who's quiet and doesn't really trust many people.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a lot older than me as well. So obviously his time, he's seen what I've seen as well, or maybe more.
Yeah.
Being a little bit older. So I think having him on the show would be something good, because that way you'll get a lot of information about what it's like at that age, because one day I'm gonna reach that age, and me and him, what we've done in our career is quite similar. So
yeah.
I am gonna be at that age, and he's gonna maybe give me some advice which I can pick up.
All right, maybe we should look him up. Yeah. So what's the future for you? What fights are you lining up? Are you going to fight?
Yeah.
Who are you going to fight? What are you going to do?
We're just looking at some names at the moment. Look, there's always that Kell Brook name out there. There's Manny Pacquiao name out there. Then you hear about Floyd Mayweather in 2020 want to fight again. So look, options are all open. Like I said, not got long left in the sport. I want to maybe give myself a very little time.
How long do you think you got?
It's hard to say, man. It's hard to say. Look, maybe 2-3 fights at most. Now you can put that in 1 year, you can put that in 1.5 years. It's just hard to say, because I want to enjoy my life with my family and my time with the money I've made, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I want to enjoy that, so, yeah.
Okay. And then this podcast has the title Disruptive in it. So what does that word disruptive mean to you? Were you a disruptive fighter?
I was, to a certain extent, yeah. No, I was a little bit disruptive, but I mean, it's just all about just being, I've always been the more calm side, more chill side. As I've got older, when I was younger, I was like that, but as I've got older, I've been a little bit more calmer, more chilled, but yeah, you can, I like that. I like that one.
And do you think being calmer makes you a better fighter?
It definitely does. Definitely. That's my advice to a lot of these young fighters as well. Being calm, because it gives you time to think. Instead of you rushing all the time and being 100 miles per hour, you're making mistakes and leaving a lot of things out. When you're calmer, you get to think about things and you pick your shots at the right time and be smart about things, and you see things quicker as well.
Yeah. Great. Where can we follow you? I know you said TikTok.
Yeah.
What social media channels do you like the most where everyone can follow you?
Yeah, so TikTok and Snapchat, it's Amir Khan Boxer is my title. And normally Twitter and Instagram, which are my main two, is Amir King Khan. So you can check that out, man. And yeah, but I'm always posting on there and stuff. Yeah. So.
And is there anything you're promoting at the moment? Have you written any books? Is there anything you want to tell everyone
nothing,
about?
Nothing. Just enjoying life, man. Just relaxing with my family and just chilling out. But just taking it easy, man. Back into training probably next week sometime. So
how long have you had off?
I've had about 2 months off, which is well needed.
Yeah.
Oh, I needed that break. So now I'm just going to get back into it now.
Are you ready? You feel like?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'm always ready, man. I've been traveling a lot, been going on vacation with my family and my kids. I think it's time now where we sit back and get back into my normal day job.
Yeah. And how does your wife and your family feel about when you get in the ring?
And they never watch the fights. They're really afraid. They're really quiet. I can see in their face how scared they are.
How does that make you feel?
And it makes me feel like, that's what's one of the reasons I've always said, look, I want to retire young. So maybe like in a 2-3 fights time, I want to retire, because I hate seeing them in that position, worried and scared. You know, I'm financially looked after, I'm secured myself financially. So I'm like, what else do I need from the sport, really? Yeah. I made a name for myself. I made good money from it. So instead of always putting them through a bit of a heartache all the time, you should just call it a day. So, and at the same time, I'm mentally and physically good.
Yeah.
I can maybe get into something else. Mm. Maybe acting or something like that.
So that's, well, you heard it here first.
That's it.
Yeah, because you said you're interested in the commentary side of it.
Yeah.
But your future plans, they seem quite relaxed, i.e. we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, you know, we're going to see where it goes.
You're not worried about retirement? And, you know, a lot of sports people, when they retire, they're like,
retirement's going to be doing a lot of charity work.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a lot of that at the moment. So charity is something I'm going to always do.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me motivated and keeps me pushing hard. Obviously, I have the Amucon Foundation, done many projects around the world. I'm going to do a lot more.
Yeah.
I can then grow that project even more bigger, grow that charity even more bigger. So, and then sort of do more projects, maybe with bigger organizations. So let's see.
Yeah.
Check this out. So this is when I won the world title. I got like a...
That's actually a bit of a... It's a wicked, Naz pose in a way, isn't
it? Yeah. I was skinny then, probably same weight as Naz then, probably. But
yeah.
This is when I was, so I got this made like a wallpaper. I didn't know what to do on the white wall, so I thought, let's put a picture of me on it. But these are Manny Pacquiao shorts signed by him.
Right.
Got Messi assigned a picture, which I got from an auction.
Yeah.
I was just... donated, gave some donation.
Yeah.
I met Conor McGregor, so I got this off him.
Yeah.
And I met him in Ireland. Lovely guy.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know Floyd Mayweather. So, he had some gloves. He threw me one, so I just got that.
Yeah.
From him. That's when I was playing football. I'm in the middle right there with Sam Allardyce and Paul Wanderers right there.
Yeah.
That's one of my fights. Didn't know what to do on this wall, so I found this and I just put it there. Yeah. So this fight, I saw in picture, New York. Oh, yeah. It's a good shot, huh? So
yeah,
it is. Look at the fish. this totally looks different, huh?
Yeah.
This is against Algeria. So this was in New York at the Barclays Centre.
Yeah.
And then I've got a Ronaldo signed frame when he used to, one time he was in Manchester. No, sorry, we met in London and he gave me this frame, yeah.
Nice.
So, met some people.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. Obviously, that's my little playhouse at night time. Yeah. My little playhouse at night time when I'm... my little girls come and take over this whole house.
Do you like the side of being famous and a sportsman where you meet all these cool people?
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. It's wicked because you are... Like, I can feel... I know when people are meeting us, they're really, like, shocked or they're really amazed to meet us. I mean, I am amazed at times when I meet people like Ronaldo, when I meet, like, people like Messi or... You know, these other famous people, so it is like a bit of a shock. So it's nice when they know you as well and they put the arm around you and they treat you a little bit more special.
Ooh.
Like you might remember, what's his name now? From Entourage.
I've never seen that.
Oh yeah, so he's one of the actors from Entourage.
Right, yeah.
That's what I've not seen. Obviously, he's come to the gym and watch his training and then we've had like loads of people come to the gym and... So yeah, it's...
Is there any one person?
And they appreciate you know what I mean? Yeah. They appreciate what you're doing. So in the gym, they're appreciating everything you do. So, and you're like, wow, I'm a fan of them. But at the same time, they're a fan of me by appreciating what I'm doing.
Ooh. Is there any one person you haven't met yet that you'd like to?
I don't know. I've met a lot of people. But who would I meet? I don't know, man.
I'll
have to. Huh?
You've met them all?
I met a lot of them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'll have to think a little bit on that one.
Right, well, WhatsApp me here it is.
Oh, WhatsApp me, yeah.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, bro. Hi, I'm Amir Khan. Like and subscribe.
That's it.
Robbie's got his fart face on. Come on.
Amir's got it.
Tell you, Harry has never asked for a photo.
No way. Really?
You're actually the reason I love boxing, by the way.
No way.
No way.
Really? Yes, Harry, you say the right things, brother.
So, good man, Harry, brother. Good seeing you. I like you more now because I'm the first guy you've asked.